In this episode, I'm going to break down some of the most common video marketing mistakes that you're never going to want to make.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuzz.
Hey-o! All right. Thanks for joining me at Video Marketing Mastery. Look, there's a lot of information that I'm going to break down for you on this news episode. Coming up, November 29th and 30th, 2017, is the Fast Forward event. It is a video marketing and sales virtual summit. Fast Forward is an online virtual event that surfaces the latest insights and practical tips for using video to fuel your B2B digital marketing, your demand generation, your content marketing, your sales development, and account management programs. There's going to be 20 presenters that are going to be providing interactive discussions to discover why video works and how to start using it today. And yours truly will be doing Demand Track 1. I'm going to be teaching video content strategy and production in this track, and I'm specifically going to be talking about attention hacking your target audience. You're going to get access to my keynote speech that you probably wouldn't see anywhere, and if you did, you would have paid a lot to be in the audience. I'm going to be talking about attention hacks, the proven ways to use video to accelerate your pipeline, right? Think about this for a moment. What's a salesperson's best friend, right? It's the accelerated pipeline. And of course, you got to learn how to use proven tactics with video to efficiently fast track your pipeline. And that's what I'm going to be teaching in this Vidyard event. And it'll also be on demand. And you can get access to the link to where it's going to take place on the show notes page for this episode, wirebuzz.com/127. It's just that easy. All right. Having the right wardrobe for your video shoot is vital. In fact, have you noticed on the TV show The Voice that their wardrobe basically never changes? You know, Wendy's my wife. Wendy and I are now 5 episodes into the latest season of The Voice. We watch every year. We actually only watch the auditions. We don't care about the battles. We don't care about the feedback from the judges. We just like live music, right? Music makes the people come together. And so we watch it while we're eating dinner and it's great and all that. But one of the things that we notice that we talk about all the time, and I'm sure a lot of you do too, is how the wardrobe on The Voice never changes. At least we're 5 episodes in and they're still wearing the same thing. And wardrobe is super important for video because it's going to impact editing. It's going to impact what stories you're telling. I mean, on The Voice, it's kind of obvious why they're all wearing the same clothes for the first 5 or 6 episodes. And it's because they're pulling the stories in post-production together to make sure that there's an even balance from one episode to the next of great stories and amazing heartfelt moments where people's careers get launched across the country to music fans like Wendy and I. So I always think that's interesting, but what about the wardrobe that you wear around your house, right? We call those in our home house clothes, right? I'm going to put on my house clothes. And we've got a neighbor that never, just like The Voice, never changes their house clothes. They're always wearing the same gray house clothes. I always see them out there or see them on their porch, you know, watching the sun come up. And, you know, I'm completely on the other end of the spectrum. I like to mix it up, you know, so I can keep it hot for my wife. I like to keep her guessing on what I'm going to wear, keep that wardrobe tight. So I noticed a study got released this week by Baylor University, one of our clients, about a case study we worked on with them using video to educate customers. In this case study, it was presented at the American Society of Human Genetics, ASHG, 2017 in Orlando. It's the big international conference. And sure, it starts off with American Society of da-da-da-da-da. But geneticists come from all over the world to be a part of this event. And there was a poster session by Baylor. Their problem was they noticed that they needed to educate people about genetic testing before people were interested, committed, willing to get tested, right? That was the hurdle they had to bring people over. So when they approached us with this problem, and as I've mentioned in past episodes, almost every one of our clients present business problems that we solve using digital or online tactics in conjunction with video. Like, video is this amazing tool for solving business problems. Baylor's problem is they needed to educate people before they were willing to buy the test, right? Or get tested, or even tell their friends and families or clients or colleagues about the test. It always starts with education. So we created an educational videos that simplified the importance of genetic testing. But even better, there's research involved. Before watching the video, when asked if you're familiar with genetic testing, on average, one out of five, with five being very familiar and one being not familiar, when we polled the audience before they watched, if they were familiar with genetic testing, the average was 1.1, meaning not familiar with genetic testing. And before watching the video, we asked, are you comfortable explaining genetic testing to others? 24% of the people said before watching the video, yes. But as a business, you can't rely on 24% saying they're comfortable, right? Communicating the message to others. And you can't rely on a one out of five on what your audience's familiarity is with your product or service if you want to move the needle and increase customer base, right? After watching the video, we tracked them and we asked them, what's your familiarity right now with genetic testing? And at one out of five, they scored with familiarity a 4.1. It's a 400% increase, right? When asked, are you comfortable explaining genetic testing to others? Remember, before they watched the video, 24% of them said yes. But what happened after they watched the video to their comfort level of explaining genetic testing to others, right? Before watching the video, 24% said yes, they were comfortable. After watching the video, 90% said they were comfortable explaining genetic testing to others. That is how you move the needle and make sure that you're educating a target audience. Remember, at the very beginning, you've got to educate. First you educate, then you convince that your product or service is right, and then you convert them into a customer, all right? It is just that easy. To get access to the poster from this study presented by Baylor at the American Society of Human Genetics, pardon me, I'm getting a phone call. Let me just turn this thing off. How annoying is that? That's a digital interruption. And you know that whenever you're trying to sell, you're always trying to sell through the digital interruptions that your target prospect is dealing with, just like my phone that just went off in vibrate mode in my back pocket. To get access to the show notes and to see this study from Baylor University, just go to wirebuzz.com/127. I saw this article in Next Web. Are you familiar with what the Next Web is? Have you ever heard of them? Well, me neither, but hearing of them or not hearing about a publication doesn't help me determine if they're credible or not. For example, you know, I've heard of the New York Times. I know a lot of people rave about them, but that doesn't make them credible either, right? You got to look at the information, start to dig through it. And here's what I saw in the article that's titled, Help Your Video Rank Higher on YouTube, Real Study 12 Tips. And here's where it goes, okay? Right off the bat. Number one, make it short. When I first started working on video marketing, and this isn't me talking, this is the article. I'm not going to mention the author's name because, as you could probably tell, I'm going to do a little bashing here. But the author writes, when I first started working on video marketing, I realized that there's a commonly known golden rule. Your marketing video shouldn't be over 3 minutes long. Why is that? Well, because video engagement is strictly linked to the video length. And so it is the possibility for your potential customers to watch the whole video and understand what you're trying to sell them. Now, the graph below, which which it says here, made by video marketing experts Wistia, gives you a quick glance at this problem. Now, I'm going to put this graph on the show notes page, wirebuzz.com/127, episode 127. And it goes on to say, as you can see, the average video views drop dramatically after the first 2 minutes and 50 seconds. The first tip is to then craft a neat cut to the chase video for your marketing purposes. Otherwise, you won't get anywhere near the first YouTube pages with a boring, lengthy video. Now, explainer videos, it goes on to say, are the best types in the engagement field. They use short introduction to present a problem during the first few seconds. Then they offer the possible solution to that problem and finally introduce the brand and explain why people should choose this product among the competition to solve the problem. Now, the bottom part about explainer videos and what the function is, I agree with. But I did have some concerns with the quick and get to the point that your video shouldn't be a certain length. And I also thought that it was interesting that they said you won't get anywhere with boring, lengthy videos. This whole thing introduced me to a really interesting conversation that you need to hear between myself and Wirebuzz's Director of Strategy, Marcus Krieg. Hey, Marcus, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me again.
All right, dude, check this out. When I first started working with video marketing, he goes on to say, it's commonly known golden rule that your marketing videos shouldn't be over 3 minutes long. Is that a golden rule?
No.
Just that easy?
You know, it's not just that easy when you're talking to me. I tend to wax poetic, and this is one of my biggest and favorite rants. We're going to continue preaching the good gospel about longer videos.
Amen.
Because I just feel like there's this huge corner of the market where, you know, people who are focusing on how to drive sales and they're fixating on conversions and who are the buyers and how do you serve the people who are going to buy your product are creating things like webinars and video sales letters. These are the longest form types of videos you're going to see on the web, and they are also the most boring. And yet, all of these conversion optimization experts are continuing to use them and build their businesses around the boringest types of videos imaginable.
Why?
You stole my line. So why? Why longer videos? Okay, so let me explain so you can have a picture in your head of what this graph looks like, okay? So at the beginning of the graph along the left-hand side, there's just a little straight line from minute one to minute two. And from minute one to minute two, you're holding steady at around 70% of people, you know, the average viewer watching 70% of your video. And then you see a really steep drop off from the 2 minute mark until the 7 minute mark, at which point you have about 54-55% of people's attention through the length of the video. Okay. So after you hit that 7 minute mark, the line goes straight until you hit about the 15 minute mark. There's no more drop off. So what that tells us is that for a video under 2 minutes, there's basically no drop-off. And that once you get to 7 minutes, the drop-off stops until you reach around the 15-minute mark. And then it drops a tad until you get to the 20-minute mark before there's another drop-off. So what is this telling us? It's telling us that there are two types of videos in here that are performing extremely well, and then there's one big drop. Okay, so super short videos will hold everyone's attention better. Obviously, duh. People don't have as much time to decide to pull the ripcord, and you're not delivering enough information for people to screen themselves out, right? Just makes sense. But then once you've had someone's attention for at least 7 minutes, there's this interesting dynamic shift that has happened in, you know, when we're thinking about the buyer's context, which is that if you're talking to the relevant person and you're delivering value and it's a longer video, all the people for whom this video is not relevant or not valuable, they have already left by that 7 minute mark.
You don't want them anyway.
Right. You don't care about those people. They are not your buyers. And so what I want you to be thinking about is not how to hold everyone's attention, but how to hold your buyer's attention and hold it long enough to deliver an impactful sales message. So think about it this way. I'm always telling clients, if your prospects knew what you knew and believed what you believed about your market and your product or service, wouldn't buying what you're selling be a no-brainer? And if you are an ethical business, the answer should always be yes. For the right person, your product should be a no-brainer. So that means your job as a marketer or a salesperson is to take the beliefs that you have, the knowledge that's in your head, and then to transfer that into your prospect's head. And once you get to that point, your product will be a no-brainer. They will already want it. But the problem is, it's harder to get, and harder these days to get a salesperson on the phone, right? It's getting harder and harder to get people's attention. Ads are getting more expensive as more people are entering the market. So attention is becoming the most expensive currency for marketers and salespeople. So once you've earned someone's attention once, are you really focused on trying to convince 70, you know, that additional 20% of people that getting them all the way to the end of a video, even if they're not buyers? Or are you more concerned with getting the buyers all of the information they need to be comfortable making a decision? So all of that is to say, if you think that your product can make someone make a decision in 2 minutes, if people only need 2 minutes of information to decide that they want to buy your thing, then yeah, make a 2-minute video. But if you feel like people need more than 2 minutes of information to feel confident making a buying decision, and you are trying to harpoon them with one piece of content, you're probably not going to do that with a 2-minute video, right? So I know in the past we've had conversations about, you know, clients coming to us asking for 30-second video ads. And every single time a client comes to us asking for a 30-second ad, we always say the same thing. What do we say, Todd?
I don't know. I don't even remember.
Let's make a 2-minute one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can't catch me off guard like that.
I know, right? But every single time, every time a client asks us for a 30-second ad, we propose, let's do two videos. We'll do a 30-second and we'll do a 2-minute because A, we want to meet your needs, but B, we also know that 30-second ads convert almost nobody. We know that. They're cheap. They're easy to get people to watch and to watch all of, but they don't create buyers because there's not enough information for people to feel comfortable making a buying decision, right?
And there's actually a reason why the infomercials are as long as they are. There's a reason why the ShamWow guy is not doing a 30-second spot, right?
Exactly. Exactly right. You need to be able to bring people through a buyer's journey. Now, if you are creating one video for your business and you're expecting that video to help you close deals, then that video needs to do a lot of work, right? Or you need a lot of videos. There's no other way. If you're going to use content, you either need multiple pieces of content that are strung together in a very, very, very smart sequence that pass people from one to the next to the next to the next, all the way through your buying journey. That's hard. Or one piece of content that is harpooning the people who are buyers, who are ready, and you're bridging from where they're at today, their state of context at the moment they start the video, all the way through what they need to know to make a purchase decision, which ultimately comes down to eliminating all the reasons to say no.
Hey, so would this be an article that you would be, would you be likely to want to keep on reading? Did he seem credible to you?
There were multiple things about that YouTube article, aside from the way that they looked at Wistia research, that I think is really interesting. But I definitely would not find that article credible, because one of the conclusions he drew was that people need to watch all of your video for your rankings to go up. And that is not even close to a ranking signal. The reality is that longer videos perform better on YouTube search. It actually is a direct turn to the argument he's trying to make. Basically, explainer videos are the least effective type of video on YouTube because people need to know to look for your product by name. Otherwise, the video is not relevant for their search query and you will not hold their attention regardless of how short it is, right? So instead of thinking about it like that, what are people actually going to YouTube for? They're going to YouTube to learn things, to get an answer to a specific question. And you want to make sure that you are delivering the best answer to that question anywhere on the web, because if you hold people's attention for 10 minutes answering a question, YouTube will say, ooh, this person got us more ad revenue because they're keeping people on our ad platform. And that's going to help you get your ranking. So 10 years ago, was it 10? Yeah, about 10 years ago, the average first page video on YouTube was under 2 minutes long, right? It was 87 seconds. And then over the years, it went up to 4 to 5 minutes. Back when I was getting started, it was shifting to the 4 to 5 minutes. That was what, 2012, 2011. And then a couple years ago, we saw another tectonic shift, the way that YouTube was building out their ad platform. And now the average first page video on YouTube search results is 14 and a half minutes long.
Boom. For a reason.
For a reason, because that is how YouTube gets paid.
But it's also, and it's a really interesting trend, because for the same reasons that you see long form videos rising to the top in search results on YouTube is the same reason you see long form text or long form video rising to the top on Google. So the competition factor is forcing the content to be longer, better thought out, more definitive guides on topics. And as such, the watch time gets longer, which is an indicator of content quality because you're holding people longer. And all of those signals move it up to the top.
You know, Marcus, I think it's interesting. Let me ask you this question. Would you rather have a 2-minute video that held 70% of your audience's attention? Or would you rather have a 20-minute video that held 50% of your audience's attention? Which one's more valuable?
Well, I think that the answer is really obvious when you consider that marketing is about more than just attention. It's also about impact and the number of times you need to earn attention. So I would say having the longer video, holding people's attention for 50% of a longer video, is going to give you a much better return on your investment. And it's going to lead to more buyers making decisions than a 2-minute video, which people only watch 70% of. Because like, what is that? That's a minute and a half of information. Whereas if you are dealing with a 20-minute video where people are watching half, you're delivering 10 minutes of information. So between comparing just those two videos, your average viewer is getting 10 times more content from you when you go for one of these longer videos. So I actually think that this Wistia chart is giving the opposite conclusion of what the article writer was delivering, which is that the reality is these longer videos, once you cross that 7-minute mark, you have their attention. Use it. You have to continue earning it. You have to think about momentum, but those are your buyers now. Those are your people. That's a ton of value that all of these marketers out there talking about shorter is better. They're leading you astray, and they're going after your budget.
It's also naive thinking. They're not really looking at what the audience is and how that audience is being educated. And one of the things that happens inside of Wirebuzz all the time, because we're always keeping an eye on the latest news in digital and in, you know, in marketing and in video and in social and all these different areas, because we know that they all come in to the roads that connect with video. It's important that we're looking at it. But what we see time and again is the people that are sharing news and information may not be that far along in their own marketing process or their own educational process. So one of the topics we have all the time, just like this one, is, wow, that's a really misleading or confusing article. And that goes on all the time. Now this has nothing to do with Wistia doing anything wrong. It's, as Marcus mentioned correctly, the author misinterpreted the data that was right in front of him. And when we looked at the data, we recognized it for what it was. Okay. And that's why we wanted to spend a few moments to talk with you. Look, if you want to get access to that chart, and I'm telling you right now, if you hear Marcus's comments and you look at the chart on the average engagement versus video length, you will see how this author is misguided and misguiding, and you'll be on the right path to helping to guide your business to make the right decisions. Now, still talking about Wistia, the Wistia video player is in the news. Marcus Krieg, stay with me for a few moments. I'm going to want to get your reaction to this breaking news that Wistia has rolled out a Gmail plugin that makes it super easy to access your video gallery from right inside of your Gmail, and then easily attach video thumbnails linked to the video's landing page of the email that you're composing.
and automatically track and log the user's viewing attention span right into your CRM. That's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, it also works for Outlook, was it 365 or 360? I think it's 365, which is basically the web-based version of Outlook, which we don't use, but it's, you know, a lot of people do. So it works for that as well. What's really interesting about this is that a lot of the people that we are doing business with may not have something like a HubSpot or a Marketo or a Pardot or some marketing automation provider that talks to your video player and tells you which people in your CRM are watching your videos, right? So that can be a, you know, that's an expensive piece of software anyway you cut it. So when we're talking to those clients who want to be able to see which of their prospects are watching their video so they can intelligently leverage their sales resources to follow up with the hottest prospects, this is a useful little workaround. It doesn't necessarily go into your CRM, but you can access the video viewing data within Wistia. Now, the way I see this making sense is if you're a smaller sales organization, you have a few salespeople on your team, then this is a good implementation of the tool because your salespeople can then go into the Wistia stream and see which of their prospects were engaging with videos. If you have lots of people, then it's going to just be a mess, right? So this implementation, the tool, the plugin, the Chrome extension still works really well in terms of making it easy to share a video. But you're going to want that marketing automation software to help sift through some of the information for you if you have a larger team.
If you want to get access to that plugin and where you can download it, some more information, just go to the show notes page for this episode, wirebuzz.com/127. Marcus Krieg, thanks for checking in on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I noticed in Yahoo Sports, they wrote, "With the series of deadly wildfires still raging through Northern California, the Golden State Warrior basketball team has decided not to use pyrotechnics at Tuesday's season opener against the Houston Rockets." Now, I watched that game, right? How could you not? How could you not see the Beard go up and his whole ensemble of new players go up against the Golden State Warrior champions? Fun game, right? But the reason I wanted to bring this up, check this out. The article from Yahoo goes on to say, out of respect for those affected by the wildfires, the team decided it wouldn't be appropriate to have that type of display. Now, the Warriors' pregame pyrotechnic display is known to be one of the most complex displays in the league. Now, naturally, this article is on the show notes page, and you could see that their video board had fire, and they had fire cannons being shot when different players were announced and they came out there. But I want to bring this to your attention because as marketers, it's important for us to remember that something we pushed live 2 months ago or 2 weeks ago may be socially unacceptable immediately after a breaking news story, right? Think about the fire. Now, I first learned this when I was a talk show host, and if news broke out of, let's say, an airplane crashed, it was everybody's responsibility at the station to ring the alarm to the producers, to the traffic people. The traffic people are the ones that manage the commercials that go in and out, live reads and recorded. Okay, traffic, the traffic department manages that. But it was everybody's responsibility to make sure that, let's say, if a plane went down, that the airliner's advertisements, their commercials, didn't play in rotation. Why? Because it would be in bad taste, right? So now that we're in the middle of a very volatile, fluid era where terror and tragedy is far too common, you have to keep your eyes out for the video messages and themes that you've created in the past that may still be in the public eye. Because something you published a month ago may be totally socially unacceptable, and you have to keep an eye on it just to make sure you aren't embarrassing the family. In past episodes, I've told you about rule number one inside this office, which was birthed by my dad. Rule number one inside my dad's house was, don't you embarrass me, not here, not now, not ever, right? And if you embarrass the family, you violated rule number one, you'll get your ass hauled out of wherever you are, and you will make a home inside of that car until the family came out. And the same is true with your business. If you're representing a client, a product,
a service, a concept, and something happens in the news, you better keep your eye on it and you better clean that up before it embarrasses the family and violates rule number one. Oh, let's talk about video marketing mistakes. I like this article. It was an Entrepreneur. It was written by Michael Giorgio. He's a guest writer. And I like this article not because I learned something new, but because I appreciate the writer's attention to the fine details that really determines video marketing success and video marketing failure. It's always in the fine details. And for those of you who are just getting introduced to video marketing, you need to understand that where video projects go wrong is always in the fine details. So you have to start off with smart strategy, right? I've spent a lot of time talking with you in this podcast series about the importance of video marketing and strategy and tactics, and then where all the interconnected pieces are. So I won't do that much here, but let me talk with you for a few moments about Michael Giorgio's guest article in Entrepreneur. He says, how many of these video marketing mistakes are you making? Hey, let's take a moment. Let's go through this together, all right? Video marketing is huge right now. And if you do it right, it can yield incredible results for your business. It does, however, require careful planning. Are you making any of these common video marketing mistakes? And most people, this is Todd editorializing, okay? Most people just wing it. And when they wing it, they roll the dice with their budget, their client's budget, the outcome, the way the client's going to look at them. And I'm not in the business of rolling the dice. It makes me nervous. I'm in the business of guaranteeing ROI. That's why I created a mini course, a free mini course to the listeners of this podcast that you can get access off of our website, wirebuzz.com/ROI. I want to guarantee results. In order to guarantee results, you got to make sure you do the pre-planning, which requires precision, okay? So here's one of the first mistakes, posting only in one place. He goes on to say, one major mistake businesses make on a regular basis is posting videos in just one place. This simply isn't going to earn you the reach you need. You don't just post on YouTube and forget about it. Post on Facebook, share it on your other social platforms. If your video is under a minute, you can put on Instagram or even on your website, or you can guest blog with it a variety of different ways. But if you put all your eggs in just one basket, you're really decreasing what I consider to be a touch point. You want to maximize the number of touch points or opportunities for you to reach out and touch your target customer, your target audience. So make sure you're posting in multiple places. The next mistake is not knowing your audience. Look, Marcus and I just got off of a call with a major 500 brand, right? We're meeting with them regularly. They approached us. They came up to me and wanted to talk with me about doing their videos and their video marketing right the first time. And when people say that to me, it's an indicator that they get it, that they understand. That I actually hear like the angels opening up in the heavens starting to sing to me, right? Like, oh, I just hear it and it's gorgeous because that's somebody that isn't thinking that they're just going to wing it with video. They're going to do it right the first time. And they recognize pre-planning and precision, right? And internally, before leading up to our meetings, before our proposal, before our strategy session with them, we read everything we possibly could get our hands on about their business. In fact, today when we pitched, it was obvious how invested in them we were. And when you're creating content, it doesn't matter if it's text, it's audio, or video, you have to intimately know who your client's target is, what makes them tick, what their interests are, what are their fears, what are their motivations, right? And you've got to understand the psychology of what they're searching on. So you got to do that research. And when we got in there with that client today, it was just obvious that we know their audience and we know what their motivational triggers are. Always make sure before you create any content, doesn't matter how good you are, make sure you know that audience backwards and forwards and not just what makes them tick, but what makes them click and buy. The next piece is lack of strategy. Now, this part sounds very Todd Hartley-ish. He goes on to say, engaging in video creation cannot just be for the sake of it. Without a long-term strategy, a video is just a video. You need to know why you're doing this in a clear and concise way if you're going to be successful. No strategy equals wasted effort. That's why each and every video that we're a part of, each and every client that Wirebuzz does work for starts at the same spot, strategy. Marcus and I get into the room, we unravel the strategy. Often there's more than just Marcus and I in the room. We have a full strategy team. So we dig in, we ask very targeted questions. We are basically unraveling what they're trying to do and take the knowledge out of their head and build it into a sequential path that includes possibly multiple videos, and they retarget the viewers to the first video so we can make sure that each person gets all the way through to the end to make a buying decision. This is part of the train tracks methodology that I've explained. A video is just a video. Just like the author of this article says, a video is just a video online. It takes people, it's designed to take people, when done right, along the path to make a purchase decision. It's a lot like a train. A passenger train moves customers from one location where they get picked up to the point where they get dropped off to make a purchase decision, right? Their final destination. And the same is true with your videos, except just like a passenger train, when the people that own the railroad get started, they don't say, hey, we need 15 passenger trains. They say, we need 15 passenger trains. Oh, and the unsexy part, we need to actually do the hard work and lay out the tracks. The tracks are your digital strategy, how they interconnect through from strategy all the way to ROI. And what fits inside the path is strategy, the web development, the content creation, how it's going to be posted, shared, engaged, targeted, and what that ad spend campaign is going to look like. All that gets mapped out before. Those are the train tracks. And when you hand off the video creation from strategy over to content creation, that's where the train often slides off the tracks and marketing train wrecks happen. So make sure that everybody has their hands in each piece of the puzzle, because that's how the train flows smoothly and the passengers get to the final destination. So, not investing in video production. That's the third mistake in this article. Now, that's important. Look, today's devices require high quality video. They do. My iPhone has a 4K display. Anything, you know, below like 720 is disgusting. It looks horrible compared to other things. And people will make that transfer. They will transfer the disgusting video quality over to your company's product or service quality, right? It's a quality connection. So the article says, make sure you're using tools that'll yield professional results. If you're inexperienced, a video production agency is a worthy investment. Now, what they don't say, they say a video production agency. This should be, you should hear alarms going off. When you hear somebody talk about a video production agency, whoa, you know what that really is? Those are washed up people from the television industry. People that wanted to win an Academy Award but couldn't make it in Hollywood. That's not who your business wants. That's a red flag for disaster. Why? Because the person who's going to be creating your online video, that they're not going to understand the interconnected pieces on the train track, so they're going to create a video for television sensibilities. They're like, well, this should be a 30-second commercial that these are people that don't know how to engage. They're not going to hit it hard in the first 5 seconds to pique interest and then pull you through. They're not going to be able to advise or guide on the intricate strategies needed to connect the landing page, turn that landing page into a squeeze or conversion page, They're not going to be able to guide or advise on the strategy and the scripting, right? Or how you pull people through a buyer's journey or a sales funnel. They're not going to be able to advise on the right video player or how to interconnect that video player to your CRM so you could track the data on the back end. Basically, you don't want a video production agency. You want a video marketing agency, an online digital agency that specializes in video. Got it? Now, it goes on to say, for lots of companies, there's no reason not to invest some capital into the process. Yeah. Almost every company we talk to is like, oh, well, we don't know if we need to invest money into the capital, into the process. I don't know if we need to do that. And that's because the person that you're talking with is a dinosaur from a different era thinking that they're still investing in a television commercial, right? So when they say for lots of companies, there's no reason to invest some capital in the process, yet those are companies that aren't committed, interested, or devoted to ROI at the end. Got it? And it goes on to say, the more you put into it, the better your return. So there's a little disconnect between that. But the next mistake, making bland and boring videos, right? That should be obvious. The article goes on to say videos are a visual medium. If they're not going to look great or fun to follow, you're not going to achieve the purpose. Now, you got to think of yourself as if you're watching it. Would I have clicked away yet? Would I still be interested? Do I still care? You should be asking that of yourself as you're going through the entire video. If the video gets boring, if the cuts and edits start to get slower and slower and longer, what ends up happening? People go from sitting back and watching to actively sitting forward and thinking, is there a better, more valuable use of my time? And the right strategic digital marketer working on your video will keep pinging the, I'm tapping on the front right here of my forehead. If you're writing the script, if you're the digital strategist, if you're the editor, if you're the marketer that's going to be engaging, everybody needs to tap on the audience's forehead and pull them right through the process. Oh, here's the next mistake. Please listen to this. This one's good. Being too salesy. While there is a time and place for videos focused on sales, those typically come later on in the funnel. For customers who are early in the sales funnel, videos should be about giving them something, whether it'll be business advice or explaining a concept. Why? Because there's a couple of reasons here. First, if you're too salesy, people react negatively, right? Sales, anytime you go into a sales pitch or a marketing pitch, what people do is it's a speed bump to virality. It slows everything down. Worse than that, it moves people onto exits. How do I get off this video and get onto something else? Whoa, I didn't want to be sold to. Think about when you walk onto a car lot. Right? You're coming for information. You run into a salesperson and all of a sudden, ick, you want to bounce. Same thing happens online. I've told you in the past, I love Thin Mint cookies from the Girl Scouts. But if I walk into the market and I see six adorable Girl Scouts standing in front of the door, I'm going to make a hard right turn and beeline into the side door where there aren't any Girl Scouts. No offense to the Girl Scouts. I'm not like a former Boy Scout that's trying to, you know, represent my crew. I just don't want to be sold to, and I don't care how adorable those Girl Scouts are. I don't want to be sold to. Instead, what you should be doing with your videos, don't be too salesy. Instead, at the top of the funnel, before you've already established value, before you've established what the problem is, you need to be thinking helpful. That's where you're establishing the value. Helpful is the new viral. The reason is when you start creating helpful content, people start sharing it. They start knowing you, liking you, and trusting you. And then as they start to know, like, and trust, they get deeper down into the process, and that's where you can get a little more salesy. But at the beginning, I want you to focus on being of value to your audience, and amazing things will happen. Anytime you get too salesy, people will bail on you, right? Notice in this podcast, I take the same approach, right? I mean, I don't come out here and start waxing poetically on the value of our videos, or I don't tell you about the cost of the videos, or why me, why me. Instead, I use the podcast to remain a helpful influence, a thought leader, to show you a wealth of information and to teach you about video marketing and how it fits in hand in glove with digital tactics. And eventually, when your time is right and you need to buy a video, you know who to turn to. It's just that easy. Helpful is the new viral. The next mistake that people commonly make with their video marketing is not sending a clear message. Now, I'm sure you've heard me in the past talk about when you create videos with confusing or difficult to digest messages, bad things happen, right? Normally, I'm going to explain this by telling you not to make the Chipotle burrito mistake with your videos. Too many ingredients jammed inside of your video is hard to digest. Instead, your videos should be less Chipotle and more like an enchilada. Few ingredients, easy to digest, and everybody wants to come back for more. Make sure you're always using that approach. The next mistake, leaving out a call to action. Oh yeah, we see this all the time. If you're gonna put people through your video, have them do something at the end. I've heard people say that, and I'm not sure where I stand with this, okay? I've heard people say that having a video, a business video, without a call to action at the end is a waste of your investment. Can be, and then again, it can't be, right? Can or can't. Jury's still kind of out in Toddland on that, because at the top of the funnel, you could just be creating value and awareness, right? You could just be helpful, getting your name out there. But I do think there's an increased value every time you can add a call to action into the video and move somebody. You just gave somebody valuable information. Now what do you want them to do, right? So leaving out a call to action can be a mistake for many businesses in their videos. On to the next mistake in the article. Not optimizing your video. Goes on to say YouTube is second only to Google as the biggest search engine in the world. They both search the metadata that accompanies videos for phrases and keywords. It's important that you use relevant keywords in categories like titles, tags, and descriptions. This will help people find your video, but be sure to do the same for Facebook whenever possible, wherever else you post your video on your website. Right? Make sure that you're using on YouTube the closed captioning. It's a missed opportunity for you. Going on with missed opportunities, the article lists failure to track. Failure to track is a mistake. In order to know whether you're doing video marketing right or not, you need to track. Video marketing is not upload, publish, and forget. There's so much you can learn from how your audience engages. Often I think of video marketing like owning a race car, right? Like the video itself is the race car. It's going to go super fast. It's going to blaze by everybody else in the competition. If you track and you learn and iterate, you know what makes race cars so fast? The process of consistent optimization. It is an art. The answers to if your video is working or not, they're always inside of the analytics. Think about Marcus Krieg, the big nerd, when he was on the podcast a few moments ago, right? He was saying, if you go and look at the metrics, you're going to learn if your video is too long or too short or where to edit. You're going to learn if it's valuable to your audience or not. The answers are always inside of your analytics. Learn, polish, perfect, and you'll finish way ahead of your competition. This article from Entrepreneur that I used as the topics and quoted a little bit from will be on the show notes page for this episode. MarketingLand had a very interesting article written by Tim Peterson titled, How Video Marketers Are Programming Around Facebook's Ad Breaks. Let's spend a few moments talking about this topic. Videos on Facebook increasingly resemble TV-style programming. until an ad interrupts the video without a natural break in the action. Have you seen this yet? But that's beginning to change as media companies within Facebook's video monetization program experiment with when exactly to insert an ad break into a video. I think by now it should be kind of obvious that we're talking about videos that are on Facebook inside of the monetization program that Facebook provides, okay? If you have a video on Facebook just for your business and it's not inside the monetization program, this isn't going to rely to you. It's not going to matter. So I want you to, but you can still learn from this because them times they are changing quickly. And the way people edit, as you're going to hear, it should be based on the way the ads are introduced. And when Facebook began inserting ads in the middle of videos earlier this year, the experience was really jarring to people, not just to viewers, but also to video creators. Now, the person in a video may be speaking and then is cut off mid-sentence for a commercial. That contrasts with TV, where the programming flows from show to commercial, often with the host announcing a break that's coming up or the narrative crescendo in the climax that's holding you, pulling you to come back, right? After the break. Now, Facebook has a few requirements governing publishers. It's kind of interesting. Media companies and individual creators use ad breaks. Videos must be at least 90 seconds long, and an ad break cannot begin within the first 20 seconds of that video. But for the most part, publishers that are part of Facebook's video monetization program, they have full control over where an ad should appear. Now, when uploading a video to Facebook, eligible creators can provide a time code for when they would like that ad break to be inserted. Do you understand how that works? Well, Whistle Sports began inserting ads within Facebook videos 4 to 5 months ago, but the company's execs said that it's too early for the company to have identified any hard or fast rules regarding where that ad should appear. It's basically, they're basically in the study the analytics phase on what the audience is telling them is going to bear the best results. But they're way ahead of other people because they're studying it right now. Early adopters, they get the worm. You know that, right? And the article goes on to say, quote, "I'm not sure there's a standard yet dictating that an ad break should appear within the front or the back half of a video," said Whistle Sports VP of content, Jay LaDonde. "It depends on the ad format," right? So when should the ad appear, the article says, to help video marketers understand when an ad break worked or did not work. Facebook provides companies in its video monetization program with analytics. Answers are always in the analytics, showing viewership retention throughout the individual videos, as well as where the ad break appeared, so that companies can evaluate their videos' watch through rates or the percentage of viewers that continued to watch a video after the ad break. Now, according to a Facebook spokesperson, as of August 2017, when Facebook had inserted a 15-second or shorter ad within videos on its social network and other publisher properties, through its audience network, an ad network, people watch the ad to completion more than 70% of the time. Interesting, right? Go to the show notes page for the rest of this article. It's really a fascinating thing to watch this part of the industry come alive, learn itself, evolve, polish, and perfect. Now, speaking of Facebook, here's a perfect example of the fox watching the hen house. TechCrunch is reporting Facebook and Google both competed for anti-immigration ad dollars during the 2000 election. In other words, if you want to use the language that Facebook and Google are commonly using, hate speech, right? Both companies competed for anti-immigration ad dollars. They competed for money from people that hate in the 2016 election, right? They solicited election ads from the same groups and organizations that they're trying to ban right now, right? So the fox has always been watching the hen house, but only when it became politically undesirable did they turn their nose to it. If you ever wanted to play YouTube videos in the background on Android and iOS, if you ever wanted to do that, I know I have. Let me give you an example.
You know, I'm a keynote speaker, right? I go to conferences all over the country and I talk about attention span. It's my big topic. Really, it's like four steps above why video. Because we're in an attention economy today. And if you know it or you don't, everybody is competing for the attention of their customer. And attention is not only scarce, but super valuable in the digital age. And you need to know the tricks in order to engage their attention, hold them, bring them through a buyer's journey, and make them buy. You need to know how to hack their attention. So while I'm speaking, I'm talking about how the world is changing and what the latest information is and how to use technology and integrate it with your marketing, and more specifically, how to use the power of video to entertain your target customer while you're educating them and then to emotionally inspire them to buy, right? So I'm also always listening to other keynote speakers because I want to go from being a niche keynote speaker that speaks to marketing audiences to a large keynote speaker that speaks to any business owner or any person out there that wants to better understand how to use the power of technology to speed up their process. So I saw this really interesting because this little thing on The Verge, because often when I go to the gym, I want to listen to a keynote speaker, not a podcast. I want to know how somebody's standing up and presenting. But if I put my phone in my pocket and I'm listening to my Bluetooth headphones, as soon as if I turn the phone to dark, then the YouTube video stops. Right? Have you ever had that? But I want to have it play. I don't really want to watch it. I just want to listen to the audio while I'm working out. So if you want to know how to play YouTube videos in the background on Android and iOS, I'm going to post a link to the directions on the show notes page for you to look at. It'll be right up there, wirebuzz.com/127. Oh, and if you love getting lost on your computer, you'll love this story. Silicon Beat reports, as of this week, anyone with a computer and an internet connection can take a fairly fascinating journey to more than a dozen planets and moons using hundreds of thousands of images captured by the Cassian spacecraft. Google has just launched a new feature on Maps that allows users to virtually explore the red planet, Venus, Mercury, Pluto, and 10 of Pluto's moons. Pretty cool, right? So a special thank you to Google for making me lose 20 minutes of my life. Remember, I told you, your time and your attention is valuable and scarce. And I blew it. 20 minutes of it going around the solar system, acting like I was George Takei. And normally I wouldn't click on a link that claims to show me what Pluto's 7 moons or surfaces look like. That's not something I would typically click on. But as soon as I used Google Maps in space, I went to Mars. And you know what I did on Mars? Exactly what you would have done. That's right. I started on Mars looking for what would be the one and only tourist spot on the entire red planet. You know what I'm talking about. That's right. I tried to hunt down that giant face carved into the red planet that we've seen so many times. And after 20 minutes of randomly clicking across the Martian surface, I realized it's interesting, but I'll never do that again. Never hunt and peck across the planet looking for a needle in a haystack Martian face carved into stone unless I was planning a trip with all my frequent flyer miles. Lord knows I need to cash out one of those. TechCrunch is reporting Twitter introduces a new video ad-centric format. Well, what? Twitter unveiled the new ad format called the Video Website Card, VWC, Video Website Card, which it describes as a creative format that combines the power of video with the ability to drive users back to a site to learn more or to take action in a moment. Now, basically, the Video Website Card starts out as an autoplay video with a customizable headline, which then opens up to a larger video on the website preview and ultimately directs viewers to the advertiser's chosen website when they tap on it.
pretty cool, right? None of this seems super fancy or new, but Twitter also points to the fact that these campaigns can be optimized for different goals, whether your goal is video views, website clicks, or awareness. Get access to the TechCrunch article on the show notes page to learn more. And also in that article, there'll be some good tactics on how to incorporate it for your business. Now, in the wake of the Harvey Weinstein scandal, a new viral social media hashtag is aiming to give a voice to women who have survived sexual assault and harassment. I like this campaign. When I saw it, I felt like I needed to bring it to you because earlier on a previous episode, I talked to you about newsjacking. Check this out. The hashtag MeToo, which is currently trending on Twitter and Instagram, was started by former Charmed actress Alyssa Milano. The 44-year-old issued a call to arms on social media. Not really arms, a call to tweets, urging women to speak up about their experiences of sexual harassment and assault. She asked women to reply to her tweet and Instagram post by replying hashtag MeToo. Alternatively, women could post the same response on Facebook. Now, this is really great. It's starting to trend. It's getting the word out. Now, how can you use that for your business or the social cause that your business, product, or service alleviates? When a news story pops up, if it is related, if your company provides value in that area, newsjack it, baby. Figure out a way to add value. Don't be marketing. Be helpful. Remember, right here, the Me Too hashtag campaign isn't marketing. It's helpful. And helpful is the new viral. Applebee's is in the news. An anonymous bartender purported to expose Applebee's Dollarita recipe over Snapchat. Throughout the month of October, Applebee's is offering a $1 margarita to remind customers that they're not only a restaurant, but they also got a bar. And however, after one of the bartender's videos went viral, customers are questioning whether or not they're getting their $1 worth. Quote, "If the Dollarita is your life, you're an animal who can't taste things," the bartender added, followed by the hashtag F the Dollarita. Apple spokesperson told Fox News, quote, "The person in this video did not follow the proper preparations instructions for the Dollarita." Oh yeah, you think? And they probably didn't follow Applebee's employee handbook also, which probably says you shouldn't start an F Applebee campaign if you want to be here long. Regardless, we're in a different age. Everyone today is a publisher. Look around in your office. It could be anybody who exposes the deep, dark, dirty secrets, right? That maybe the Dollarita doesn't have that much alcohol in it. Really, what is a dollar's worth of alcohol and mix? How big is that, right? Can't be a whole hell of a lot. And if it is, the alcohol can't be very good. So you're really getting what you're paying for. So it's interesting to see that there's a teachable moment here for customers. And Applebee's, in a response, should have created a video that showed the quality and encouraged the audience really to see how it's made, what the recipe is. Show the recipe so people can make it at home, right? Add value. Don't just be marketing. And get a printout receipt, right? Give them something that they can print out or bring in or show the recipe being made on their phone. Turn it into value so they could come in, show that, get a discount, get a free one, something like that, and show up at Applebee's to get a Dollarita during happy hour. Now, my mouth is freaking watering. Not because I want an Applebee's Dollarita, but because it is Friday here. My wife and I already have plans for happy hour. I can't wait. Let's make this thing happen. Snapchat is introducing a new feature that's going to transform the experience of using the apps at a fundamental level. Remember, if we're using our phones, we're using our devices, we open up an app, we close that app, we open up another app, we close that app, and we keep bouncing back and forth. The new Apple iOS 11 is really smart. Inside the text messaging app, what they've done on a fundamental level is they've imported the features of other apps. Give you an example. I love sports, right? So my dad will text me in the evening, hey, you watching this game? Or he's like, hey, I'm at dinner. What's the score? Right? Just about to get in the car. Score me. Or my dad will say, Sports Center me. Da-na-na, da-na-na. And now inside of the new Apple iOS 11, inside of the messaging app at the bottom is a tray of my other apps that allows me to grab relevant quick information without closing the messages app. So I could grab, if my dad's like, hey, I'm in the car, what channel's the game on and what's the score? I can do, or even what time does the game start? What channel is it on? And I can grab all that information at one time with just one click, send it off to my dad, and never leave the message app. Thank you, sweet baby Jesus, right? I've been waiting for this forever. So let me tell you about how Snapchat is going to introduce a new feature that's going to transform the experience of using apps in a fundamental way. They're called contact cards. Everybody and my mother's rolling out a card, right? We just got one a few moments ago from the likes of our friends at Twitter that rolled out video website cards. We've seen in the past that the geniuses at Google in Mountain View have relied heavily on cards, and you can see it in all the renditions of what Google rolls out on the mobile devices. It's really card displays on Google Glass. When I had one of those and I was a glass hole as a covert developer for Google, you would see cards swiping across the glass, right? And the same is happening now with Snapchat. Context cards are a new way to find out more information about any Snap shared by users, providing access to things like restaurant reviews, reservations, Uber, and Lyft ride hailing, contact information, and more. This is where Snapchat has a chance to turn its everyday user engagement into a real-world discovery and marketing platform that could potentially rival Yelp in terms of where you have serendipitous discovery and driving marketing value for restaurants. This should be an acknowledgement to you that the dominant apps are now in another phase. They're in a phase of incorporating the most relevant information in a fundamental way that you can pull through the user experience and never leave their app. It's also important to know that if you work at Instagram or at Facebook, Don't do anything. Just sit back like you always do. Let Snapchat innovate. And then if it works and people like it, steal it and put it on your app and claim it to be yours, right? Good on you, Instagram. Just sit back, do nothing. Let Snapchat innovate again. And you come in, right in, and put it in front of all your audiences and claim it to be good as yours. All right. So this is a lot of information for this episode. All of it on the show notes page. A special thank you to Marcus Krieg, the big nerd, for checking in on the podcast episode. I've got to run. I've got a call coming up in a few moments that I need to be on with clients. But in summary, we went over a lot of information today. And if you want to guarantee that your videos generate ROI, a return on investment, and Lord knows, that's what makes these campaigns valuable. Stop thinking about your videos like television commercials or something you've got to have because people want to see big, shiny pictures and they need to be entertained, and start thinking of them as a business tool and how you move people through a buyer's decision, a thought process, so you can educate, convince, and then convert. And the way you get started is by looking at my 5-part video mini course at wirebuzz.com/ROI. You'll learn my secrets for guaranteeing your videos generate ROI. You know the best part about being able to guarantee your videos generate ROI? You never lose your job. It's true. If you can prove out to your boss the value of the videos, just like I explained about how we proved out for Baylor the value of the videos that we create for them and how it moves the needle, you're never going to want to miss that opportunity because it makes you invaluable to your company. On behalf of the team here at Wirebuzz, we are honored to bring you the latest information to teach you how to do video marketing the right way and to make you a very, very successful video marketing master. Now, before I say bye for now, if this podcast episode was valuable to you, so Google, iTunes, Stitcher, go up to the one that you love the most, subscribe to this podcast, and each and every episode will be sent directly to your mobile device. And if this episode was valuable to you, make sure you share it with a friend. Make sure you rate and review. And if you've got any topics that you'd like to see covered on this podcast, hit me up, wirebuzz.com/pitch with a P. Pitch me your topic. It'll go right to my inbox. I will ingest it, fit it into the program, and I'll look forward to hearing from you on, you know, really all of you that have been reaching out to me on social. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Love knowing what you're going through, what your business is. I love hearing about your product or service that you're trying to amplify with video. Don't hesitate. I'm approachable, and I look forward to hearing from you. On behalf of the team at Wirebuzz, I wish you a very successful, profitable endeavor with video, and I look forward to the next episode where I bring you more information, tactics to make sure you are a video marketing master. Peace.